feel good, don't it? This is for warm days that drift away while the sun sets and the ghettos play. Long nights on a hot summer's block where you sip your brew and never touch your glass. This is for eyes that cry like yours and learn to smile.
Spitfire breathes the lives of women of color in Montreal. We come together to say no to the silencing of our voices.
Welcome to Spitfire Women of Color Radio every last Wednesday of the month on CKUT 90.3 FM. The time is now 6:08 p.m. and we have an exciting program in store for you tonight. We will be hearing from Miss Alyssa Clutterbuck on Assata Shakur and her recent placement by the FBI on their list of most wanted terrorists, as well as Malek about the status for All March, which took place earlier this month in Montreal.
We will also be hearing from Mercedes Bonaire, who will be continuing our roundtable discussions on race, media, and pop culture. All this coming up on the next Spitfire Radio.
You see, this is all. 2013. 3 days of free fun for all ages. The party starts May 31st from 6 p.m. at Poos Pop at 105 St. Viateur West and continues through June 2nd. Come to Poos Pop Craft Fair to discover the work of over 80 local artists and designers, Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 6. That's not all. Check out our free daytime events June 1st and 2nd at Gare Jean Talon, Metro Jean Talon. There will be bands and food daily and Kids Pop June 1st. We're also hosting more kids' activities June 2nd at Espace Pop. Full schedule and details, popmontreal.com. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
Welcome back to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on CKUT 90.3 FM. The time is now 6:13 p.m., and now, earlier this month, black freedom fighter and political prisoner Asada Shakur was added to the FBI's most wanted terrorist list. Shakur is the first woman and the second domestic target to be added to the list. Alyssa discusses the implications of this action and the four-decade-long hunt for Asada and what she represents by the U.S. government.
The day before it was time to escape, I called my grandmother, and I couldn't call her, you know, say, I'm getting ready to escape. And so she said, I want to tell you something. Are you listening to me? Yes, grandmother. I don't want you to get used to that place. Don't get accustomed to that place. Do you hear me? Yes, grandmother. Are you sure you hear me? Yes, grandmother. I do not want you getting used to that place. Do you hear me? Yes, grandmother. And so when I hung up the phone, it was like a sign. It was like, you know, my grandmother knew. It was like everything was ready to go. And everything went, and everything went fine.
On May 2nd, the Federal Bureau of Investigation added Assata Shakur to its most wanted terrorist list. In addition, the state of New Jersey announced it was adding $1 million to the FBI's $1 million bounty for her capture or information leading to her capture. This brings the total to $2 million. Assata Shakur is the first woman ever to make the terrorist list and only the second domestic terrorist to be added to the list, a label put on her by the U.S. government, specifically the FBI. Assata Shakur is currently 66 years old and living in Cuba, where she has been granted political asylum. According to the New York Times, the FBI says it added Shakur to the list because she is a, open quote, supreme terror against the government, close quote, who continues to advocate revolution and terrorism against the U.S., a confusing conflation to many. She's a danger to the American government, says Aaron T. Ford, agent in charge of the FBI's Newark division. Shakur was a member of the Black Panther Party and the Black Liberation Army, which were heavily monitored by the FBI through largely illegal surveillance in the 1960s and 70s. Assata Shakur is now on the same list as Taliban leaders for what appears to be the fault of being black, female, politically active, and vocal against state repression, namely racism and colonialism. In May of 1973, Shakur was in a car that was pulled over by police on the New Jersey highway. A shootout ensued shortly thereafter, resulting in the deaths of her companion and fellow activist Zaid Malik Shakur and State Trooper Werner Forrester. Assata Shakur was wounded in the gunfight, having been shot twice. Accounts of what happened that night differ greatly. Surviving trooper James Harper claimed that Zaid Malik Shakur began firing when they asked him to step out of the vehicle, whereas Assata Shakur attests that the police fired first, even after she had her hands in the air. Assata Shakur was convicted of Forrester's murder and sentenced to life in prison. In 1979, with the help of allies, she was able to escape from confinement and flee to Cuba, where she lives today. Shakur has a massive support internationally, and for decades people have worked to condemn the use of the justice system to target, hunt, and lock up people of color who speak out against government repression. Many of the facts in the state's case against Shakur are shaky at best, unfounded of course, relying on he said, she said accounts without one shred of forensic evidence. And Shakur was convicted before an all-white jury. In a 1998 open letter, Assata Shakur writes, "My name is Assata Shakur, and I am a 20th century escaped slave. Because of government persecution, I was left with no other choice than to flee from the political repression, racism, and violence that dominate the U.S. government's policy towards people of color. I am an ex-prisoner, and I have been living in exile in Cuba since 1984. Shakur also recounts the incident for which she was convicted of felony murder, subsequently serving time in prison, and eventually seeking political asylum for her imprisonment. I will read an extended excerpt here. On May 2, 1973, I, along with Zaid Malik Shakur and Sundiata Akoli, were stopped on the New Jersey Turnpike, supposedly for a faulty taillight. Sundiata Akoli got out of the car to determine why we were stopped. Zaid and I remained in the car. State Trooper Harper then came to the car, opened the door, and began to question us. Because we were black and riding in a car with a Vermont license plate, he claimed he became, quote, suspicious. He then drew his gun, pointed it at us, and told us to put our hands up in the air, in front of us where he could see them. I complied, and in a split second, there was a sound that came from outside the car. There was a sudden movement, and I was shot once with my arms held up in the air, and then once again from the back. Zaid Malik Shakur was later killed. Trooper Werner Forrester was killed, and even though Trooper Harper admitted that he shot and killed Zaid Malik Shakur, under the New Jersey felony murder law, I was charged with killing both Zayd Malik Shakur, who was my closest friend and comrade, and charged in the death of Trooper Forrester. Never in my life have I felt such grief. Zayd had vowed to protect me and to help me to get to a safe place, and it was clear that he had lost his life trying to protect both me and Sundiata. Although he was also unarmed, and the gun that killed Trooper Forrester was found under Zayd's leg, Sundiata Akoli, who was captured later, was also charged with both deaths. Neither Sundiata Akoli nor I ever received a fair trial. We were both convicted in the news media way before our trials. No news media was ever permitted to interview us, although the New Jersey police and the FBI fed stories to the press on a daily basis. In 1977, I was convicted by an all-white jury and sentenced to life plus 33 years in prison. In 1979, fearing that I would be murdered in prison and knowing that I would never receive any justice, I was liberated from prison, aided by committed comrades who understood the depths of the injustices in my case and who were also extremely fearful for my life. For me, the case against Asada Shakur, the ongoing vendetta against her, raises one obvious question. Why is the government so obsessed with Asada, a 66-year-old black woman? One notes the coincidence that the date she is placed on the terrorist list is exactly 40 years from the date of her arrest in New Jersey in 1973. Perhaps it is the ease with which black women's lives can be criminalized in the eyes of the state. Perhaps it is because Asada is a symbol of what it means to be a black woman who dares to fight back. Is the FBI saying that any black woman, woman or man of color who declares their innocence in the face of injustice is a terrorist? Is the government so concerned with the masses of victims of racial and sexual domination rising up that they must take these extreme, draconian measures to frighten us all into silence and submission? In this post-September 11th world, the definition of terrorism is ever expanding and broadening to silence us. It is becoming so subjective we don't even know what it is anymore. What is terrorism today? Talk about double jeopardy, for it seems that being black and female and right in your activism and political work against state repression gets you on the hunted list. For Spitfire, this is Alyssa Clutterbuck.
My name is Asata Olubala Shakur. Asata means she who struggles. Olubala means for the people, and Shakur means the thankful. It is a name that I took to carry on the name of Zayd Malik Shakur.
Thank you, Alyssa, for that very thought-provoking piece. And now we will have Ms. Malek with a report on the
Status for All March.
Status for All March.
Thank you, ladies. On a sunny afternoon last Saturday, May 18th, hundreds of people set out on marches from the four corners of Montreal to voice their support for migrants, refugees, and non-status people. While their action was almost cut short by police attempts to end the marches before they even began, they successfully traced their routes to downtown Montreal, chanting and handing out thousands of flyers along the way. Today, there's thousands and thousands of people who live in this country without status. They're fighting for a better life, fighting against the capitalist system that is forcing them to leave their homes. Together, we're united, and together we can take the streets and fight for status for all, said Andrea Figuera of No One Is Illegal at a speech during the march. Dubbed the Status for All March, the decade-old event was organized this year by Dignidad Migrant, Mexicans United for Regularization, the Immigrant Workers Center, No One Is Illegal Montreal, and Solidarity Across Borders. Starting in Villeray, Verdun, Côte-des-Neiges, and Hochelaga, all four groups converged on Phillips Square for a community festival. By the time the last group had arrived, hundreds were already there with balloons, food, banners, and piñatas. While a festive mood, the event meant to highlight the very serious concerns about the persecution and marginalization of immigrants, both with and without official status.
The event's primary four demands were status for all, meaning that all residents of Canada obtain the documents allowing them to receive necessary services and rights afforded to everyone else, an end to deportations, especially those breaking up families, an end to all immigrant detention, and an end to what is dubbed double punishment, whereby migrants who face criminal convictions are also doubly punished by facing possible deportation. This year, the march was also to show support for Solidarity City, a campaign to ensure that residents of Montreal have access to essential services in the city. Solidarity Across Borders and other groups have been campaigning vigorously about this over the past year, including to ask the Commission Scolaire de Montréal to allow all students to enroll regardless of immigration status. Currently, students need to present proof of citizenship or residency to register for schools in Quebec. Another focus has been on the Montreal food banks. Not known to many, food banks often ask for documentation proving a person's immigration status before providing them with food. At the heart of many of these demands is the fact that migrants are searching out a better life, often because they are displaced by economic difficulties or by war and violence. Hear now the Solidarity City Declaration. For thousands of undocumented immigrants across the country, cities such as Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver are sweatshops. Immigrants and refugees work the most precarious and dangerous jobs. The Canadian economy cannot survive without this super exploited workforce, made particularly vulnerable by their lack of permanent status and the threat of deportation. In order for their labor to provide this windfall of Canadian capital, non-status migrants are forcibly kept in a state of heightened vulnerability, deprived of access to essential services and basic social and economic rights. This apartheid system is maintained both through laws and regulations and through fear of discovery and deportation. Everybody should have access to health care, education, social housing, food banks, unemployment benefits, and any other social welfare, regardless of immigration status. Labor norms and human rights should apply equally to all. At a time when money and corporations can cross borders more easily than ever, these very borders are taking on an ever more deadly character for billions of people around the world. Solidarity City is the name given to the vision that resists this reality, that aims to transform our communities from sites of racist exploitation to places of mutual aid and support. In order to bring this vision closer to reality, we are asking community organizations and centers, collectives, trade unions, healthcare providers, educational institutions, food banks, shelters, housing co-ops, and everyone else to commit to providing services equally to all, regardless of immigration status. As one important symbolic step, we are asking all to endorse the Solidarity City Declaration. By endorsing this declaration, you are agreeing to publicly support the Status for All campaign, meaning opposition to deportations and detentions, as well as supporting regularization for all non-status migrants. Moreover, if an organization provides services, it agrees to never ask for information regarding immigration status, treat all information regarding other people's immigration status as strictly confidential and never share it with government agencies, not charge fees based on immigration status, implement a policy of non-cooperation with the Canadian Border Services Agency, including barring them from the premises, and work to make sure that labor and other human rights standards are applied equally to all and without regard to immigration status in our organizations, workplaces, and communities. Faced with fear, isolation, precarity, and division, we strike back with solidarity, mutual aid, and direct action.
That was really awesome. Malek, how do I publicly sort of put myself in allegiance with this declaration and this movement?
I'm so glad you asked.
Do they have a website?
Yes.
Or a Facebook page?
The main way to get involved with the Solidarity City movement, which is something, you know, it's not completely unrealistic
Toronto has already agreed to become a solidarity city.
What?
Most major, very recently, the municipal government, sort of awesome. The city council passed an agreement to become a solidarity city. Most of the major cities in the United States are solidarity cities. Of course, they use a more Christian term of sanctuary city. If you want to get involved, you can get in touch with Solidarity Across Borders at www.solidarityacrossborders.org. And if you're more the telephone kind, the phone number is 438-933-7654. That's 438-933-7654.
Thank you so much, Malak. You are listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on CKUT 90.3 FM. Stranger, and that it was you.
Everything you said to her became a part of me. Sleeping alone, I cried out for you in my dreams. No matter how hard I try to change you, all you change was me. Because everything you didn't want became a part of me. All the things you'd ask for, I just could not see. Everything you are,
everything you are,
everything you are, left a broken heart.
Through the dark and shades of gray, I see beauty.
You are listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on CKUT 90.3 FM. I am going to throw this mic over to Mercedes Bonaire, who
woo woo.
Is introducing a really interesting discussion in studio today.
Thank you, thank you. So it's just basically me bringing up old news, because it seems like it just never, ever gets resolved. So I am basically going to be talking about race, pop culture, and media, and how just the language we use nowadays has become so desensitized to the point where it's become part of our vocabulary. And it's basically how, in a way, it's become kind of nonsense. Not nonsense, but like, what is it? Like, not consciously racist, but racist at the same time.
Just like when ridiculous.
Like that,
I don't know.
That, like that awful Brad Paisley LL song, Accidentally Racist.
Yes. And I mean, it's to the point now where it's just everywhere you turn, it just seems like political correctness doesn't exist anymore. And I mean, yes, it's fine to say that it's your right to freedom of speech and freedom of expression. But when those expressions and words become kind of damaging and discriminatory and offensive, where do we draw the line? Like, for example, like the other day, not the other day, but like a couple months ago, like I was on my Facebook And it's just all these memes. I don't know if you know what memes are, where they're basically like these images where you can put like snappy captions onto them and they turn out to be funny. But it's this incessant use of the N-word and then be this, that, and the other. It was kind of like everyone in the world is saying this, black, white, yellow, purple, green, and just reposting this, but not actually seeing what they're reposting.
So racist and sexist all at the same time.
And just for me, it's just interesting because it makes me think about what the struggle was for. I mean, you've went how many years trying to kind of remove the N-word from describing you as a slave, lower than dirt, but you're bringing you back to be something cool, like a term of, almost a term of endearment, where it's just constantly passed back and forth. So when someone else says it, and then you want to call them out as racist, you can't really say they're racist because it's just so embedded in our society as something that's normalized. So I mean, what are we doing wrong, essentially? That's what my question is. And like, how can we change it if we want to kind of better our society and just raise ourselves above all of this without reverting back to these old ways? Because it seems just everything's going full circle and then it just never stops. So where do we stop it and how do we stop it?
I think you're taking a really important step right now by just bringing it up and speaking up against it and saying, hey, this meme is not funny. In fact, it's hateful and I'm not down. And I think it's really important for us as women of color, not only to step out individually and do that, but to stand together as communities and with a collective voice say, hey, we're not down with this. This is not cool. And I think it goes so much further than just political correctness. It's about basic respect.
Yeah, it's interesting that you should say that. Like, so basically, I just want to clarify for our audience, you're talking about a Facebook meme,
yes,
where people were normalizing the use of the
N-word, yes,
the N-word. Right. Mm-hmm. So everyone could imagine what I mean by say. I'm not going to say the N-word. I just don't feel like it's my place.
That's
to
a wise decision on air, Victoria.
So, and there are different ways of saying the N-word, right?
Yeah. I mean, like nowadays, I guess.
Now there seems to be like this pop cultural way of saying the N-word where it's like
all in rap songs.
Right. Yeah. It's like an abbreviation.
If you pronounce it with an A at the end,
it's not really the N-word.
Right.
But
so
another term for like
it's really interesting because I had a conversation with someone who was arguing that exact point, that there is a difference between saying the N-word in its classic, you know, totally hateful, derogatory, you know, way that is linked to a whole history of, you know, African American like slavery and like all of that shit.
I'd like to meet this person.
and then the whole like kind of, you know, I guess like Ebonics sort of, I don't know, is it in like the language of Ebonics that as like a form of to show, I don't know, that you're like, you know,
down
or like a friend.
I guess it's like,
or
like a form, familial. It's not really a formality, but what would you call it? Just term of like, yes, now we have like mutual respect for like you know when you say like my brother, my sister,
right?
That, yeah,
kind of
exactly
thing. It's just now it's that.
But what happens when those sort of internal phrases and terms of endearment, as we were saying, what happens when that goes public and now it's on Facebook and now people of all different sorts of backgrounds are using it, and now it's used in a caption to portray a very classist, sexist sort of picture? I mean, these pictures are, you know, people drunk, people running around half naked, you know, typically like supposedly like low class people, and saying, oh, and then some funny caption with the N-word. I mean, to me, that's not a term of endearment. That's not an internal, you know, bro community culture at all. And so sort of like when you do reintroduce these terms and these phrases back into the popular culture, you know, and then it sort of goes beyond your control, what do you do and how do you react?
That's actually a good question. Like, and I feel for me personally, there isn't much we can do at this point because it's gone beyond our control. It's actually spread like wildfire. When, how do you contain a wildfire? It takes more than one person, but it just feels like even if we do have this collective, it just, you can say as much as you want to say, but then 5 years from now, Yeah. Is it still going to make a difference, or is it still going to be there?
Well, the struggle is always going to be the struggle, child.
Well, for real. That is certain. But yeah. Just for me, it's just interesting because then you want to say how one person can say it, whereas another person can't, yet everyone is saying it. So you can't, like, for me, it's just like you need to set an example and follow it. Like, if you don't want people saying, don't say it yourself. But people are still saying it anyway. So then when someone like me reacts to it, it becomes, what's the big deal? But you
why
don't.
Why are you so sensitive?
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, why are you getting angry? I mean, everyone says, and then it like slips out, and I kind of give them dirty looks. And they're like, why are you giving me this look? Like, it's in songs, it's in everywhere. I mean, why can't I say it? You say it. No, I don't say it. So, I mean, it's just, there's no word you can use to describe it. Like, I mean, in terms of like how you feel about it, because it just seems like no one really cares anymore. As long as it's funny, as long as it's gonna get you that like ability on Facebook, or if it's gonna get people talking, you can't remove it because there's so much attention drawn to it, but not the right kind of attention. So,
and it's just so ridiculous to me, because I remember there was a photo going around on Facebook of a woman who had had a double mastectomy, and she got this beautiful tattoo of like a basically like a tattooed bikini top, floral bikini top, tattooed on her body to cover the scars from her double mastectomy. And so this image was going around on Facebook of her topless with this massive tattoo on her chest. And for a long time, Facebook banned that image, and they kept taking it down because they said it violated, you know, it was nudity and all this. And so it's just crazy to me that, you know, Facebook isn't stepping up. They violate this really positive image, but then they don't step up with these terrible ones. I just don't even
in terms
get
of
it.
Like the terms of, what is it, usage or whatever they call
right.
it.
Right, if you report it as an abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Like recently I read an article about, I think it was in Metro News. It was in some like Montreal, Quebec, I don't know, like, you know, publication. And it was the editor or the writer was complaining about how someone had complained about a comedian, a Quebec comedian, doing blackface and in one of the performances, and basically framed the question of like, you know, a white person donning the blackface and making a joke about it or doing performance of that, like. The writer was just really upset that that was characterized as a racist depiction or as
what an idiot.
Because it was like, well, you know, the comedian didn't know that, you know, blackface is related to, you know, this like history of like, you know, African-American like enslavement in the States, you know, hundreds of years ago. And so because, you know, it was done in ignorance, it's not really racist.
And that's a defense I don't buy at all. No matter what the race is, no matter what the religion, you can't sit there and tell me you don't know or you're not aware, because we live in a society now, we have access to this information. Yeah. And it's never like it's out of reach. And to sit there and say it's because of how, like, I get some people are raised that way, but you're not exposed to that 24/7 outside of your home. You're surrounded by people who understand this, who can explain this to you. And unless you want to actually open your mind to it, then there's no reason for you to say that you did not know or you didn't know how to
change your Googling ways. Blackface before you do it on stage? How about asking a black person what they would think? You know what I mean? Like, there's just a million different things you could have done before that. Your so-called accidental racism or ignorance. And it just goes back to the beginning of, like, it's a question of respect. And it's just, you know, regardless if you meant to be racist, you didn't, you hate black people, you don't, whatever. The point is, it's incredibly disrespectful.
And that kind of brings us back to, like, our previous discussion on the last show, where in terms of, like, women of color in the media and just how they might experience racism, deal with racism. Like, how do you think that they do it on a daily basis without kind of not ignoring it, but just being in the public face all the time and trying to have this image that everyone sees them as without kind of betraying their own beliefs?
Right, and this was in relation to a specific example, right? Yeah, wasn't it that Alyssa brought it to
attention? In terms of Rihanna in a Dutch magazine, and they had referred to her as the nigga bitch. And
what was that?
We're only going to say it once.
And that's all.
And that's it.
And that's what they had referred to her as a black woman in the media, and kind of being, if you want to say, quote unquote, down with the homies, and just being able to relate to that kind of audience.
Right.
And it's kind of, it's unfortunate that it's come to that point where it's just, this is who you are. This is how we're going to define
that
you.
That label.
Based on your race. Exactly. The labeling. And it just makes me wonder and just if it's ever going to change. And I mean, we'll see what happens, I guess, down the road.
Mm. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for bringing this, this topic up again into the studio, because it seems that like every month we come across something on Facebook or, you know, in the newspaper, and just like, wow, this is not played out, but an ongoing issue.
And no one's talking about it.
Yeah.
But you know what? We are here.
For sure. And, you know, our listeners out there, if you have any ideas or thoughts, you know, please drop us a line or give us a call, you know, during a show, and we can talk about it. So thank you.
Thanks.
Tell me who I have to gain reciprocity. See, no one loves you more than me, and no one ever will.
Yeah.
Hello, and you are listening to Spitfire Women of Color Radio, only on CKUT 90.3 FM. I'm Victoria, Malek, and Mercedes is here with me in the studio, and I just wanted to make this awesome for this film in recognition of Asian Heritage Month, which takes place every May in Canada, which is this amazing sort of recognition by Canada that of all of the amazing contribution that Asian Canadians bring to this fair land. So in honor of that, I'd like to remind everyone that this amazing film is playing tomorrow night at Cinéma du Parc called Être Chinois au Québec, or Being Chinese in Quebec. This is a film which is a feature documentary directed by Malcolm Guy and William Ging Wee Dare. This is a documentary which follows Bethany Orr and Parker Ma, two young members of the community who have decided to call Quebec their home as they set out across the province to explore their identity and their roots. And through the vibrant neighborhoods of Quebec's largest city, Montreal, and along the winding roads of Quebec to the end of the world, Gaspé, Bethany and Parker meet an engaging group of Quebecers of Chinese origin. They are strong, outspoken characters carving out a place in the Quebec of today, where the debate about identity and language are constant subjects of discussion, which is really interesting. And this road trip takes place against the backdrop of the apology by the Canadian government to the Chinese community in Canada for past injustices, notably a head tax for Chinese entering Canada, followed by an exclusion act that prevented all Chinese and only Chinese from entering Canada between 1923 and 1947. And this really interesting picture also features a dynamic soundtrack composed by Quebec-based musicians Kid Koala, Janet Lem, and Dino Giancola. So I just wanted to remind our listeners that this amazing film is playing, I think, for the last night, May 31st at Cinéma du Parc at 7 p.m. And it's really interesting because when I was looking at cool stuff that was happening around town in order to celebrate Asian Heritage Month in Canada, I was just thinking about how, like, you know, there's just so many cool Asian people in Canada doing really cool stuff. And I thought of my friend Adrienne Vincente, who used to actually contribute to Spitfire. And now she works for this website called AsianCanadianWiki.org. And so I also wanted to big up AsianCanadianWiki.org, which you can visit at AsianCanadianWiki.org. And basically, it's a website dedicated to promoting Asian Canadian community. And it's a database of all things Asian Canadian, from artists, scientists, leaders, to cultural centers, community organizations, and festivals. And the artistic director, Janet Lem, who's also who also contributed to the soundtrack of the film I just plugged, Être Chinoise au Québec, what she says about the project is that the Asian Canadian Wiki is significant not only to the growing Asian artist community, but to Canada as a whole. Over the summer, we've added hundreds of new faces, organizations, and projects, all of which represent the diversity in our country. We encourage users to take advantage of the interactive nature of the Wiki platform and add themselves or anyone they think is missing. So, yeah, this is like a really incredible learning, knowledge sharing tool and resource, and consists of sharing the extraordinary by the ordinary. That's us, folks. Yes, we are extraordinary and ordinary at the same time. And I think you should visit the site and participate in this like national debate that's happening online. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what else is happening?
Well, I'd also like to announce the Legal Network's 5th Symposium on HIV Law and Human Rights, which is fast approaching. That's going to be June 13 to 14 of this year, this summer. This year's symposium features experts leading workshops on 4 of the most pressing issues affecting the HIV community today. Canadian and international sex workers will be speaking out about sex work decriminalization, which will be heard at the Supreme Court on June 13, 2013. Also on the agenda are sessions on the impact of municipal bylaws on our communities and the state of the criminalization of HIV non-disclosure in Ontario. In addition, Frank Mugisha of Sexual Minorities Uganda, SMUG, will be joining us for our LGBT rights workshop, along with a dynamic group of advocates who won't give up on the fight for equality around the world. Frank Mugisha is also the keynote speaker at the free public event, A Conversation with Frank Mugisha, led by veteran CBC reporter Ron Charles at the Bluma and Bram Appel Salon of the Toronto Reference Library on the evening of Thursday, June 13th, 2013. So make sure y'all check that out.
Sounds interesting. Sounds good. And that brings us to the end of the show. Thank you to our contributors, guests, as well as the many others who made the show possible.
Spitfire Women of Color Radio broadcasts every last Wednesday of the month at 6 p.m. on CKUT Radio 90.3 FM. Write to us at Spitfire. That's S-P-I-F-I-Y-A.
Make your money, y'all. Just do what you got to do.
Check out www.spitfire.blogspot.com. Hey!
Nothing gain, nothing tried. Very few even try. Most just wanna get high. From the cradle to the grave. Don't wanna be your slave. And I'm not gonna take it how you wanna. Love me or hate me. Support me or snake me. Either way I show love. Let it make me or break me. I'm the queen of self-esteem. Don't sweat the cream. Just set the scene. Get screamed like how you mean. Straight up. On a string, like them hoes sucking on your thing, overworked and underpaid for days. Behave, I'm not gonna be your slave. People screaming hardcore, living in the ghetto, sleeping on the floor. What you thought I was gonna rise? Do my thing, get my piece of the pie. You're holding your breath for great God out the sky. Best live your life, cause you just waiting to die. People still taking life for a joke. Can't see the fire, but you blow out of smoke. If you didn't get it, you got what you deserve. And just like that, that's my word. Every day I wake up, seeming on the come up. No daydreaming, got to stay one up. How you gonna sit back and wait on the wealth? Gotta go get it, motivate yourself. If not, you only perpetrate yourself. And at the end of the day, you only hate yourself. If you know me, you know my motto. Take in charge. You got what it takes to make it all.